Hello and welcome to another episode of The 30, the podcast in which Phil Costa and I take a look back at the Premier League action from the weekend in 30 minutes or thereabouts. Phil, good afternoon to you.
Hey, Andrew. Sorry, I almost didn't hear you there with all those sirens going on in the background. I think the celebration police must have swung by my house.
So. Oh, my goodness. Watch out. Watch out. I believe they have extremely hairy hands. So if you're averse to that kind of thing, just take care.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a cold world out there, people, so be careful. Enjoy your evenings.
Exactly.
You're allowed to do it.
You are allowed. Okay, so look, Arsenal remain top of the table. And of course, there are another 8 Premier League games that we can talk about. This could be a feature. You know, this is not a bug, it's a feature. Where do you think we should start? I mean, the title challengers, I suppose, if they can hang on to our coattails, are Manchester City, and they had a bit of a scare at Crystal Palace.
I don't know what it is about Crystal Palace, but they seem to have this kind of hold on them, especially at the Etihad. I remember a few times in the last few seasons they've taken some big wins away from there, and I remember a few incredible goals. I think Andros Townsend scored an incredible one a few years back, and it seemed to start again on that similar theme. There was that early own goal from John Stones, and then Joachim Andersen powered that header past Edison, but there was some really bad defending, shoddy defending from set pieces for both of those goals, actually, which is not always too common for Man City. Usually they're quite competent defensively, but I think Patrick Vieira is doing an incredible job with what he's got at his disposal. I think they're becoming a really big threat, especially for the big teams, because they kind of excel in set pieces, on the counter-attack, and that kind of suits the kind of the cat and mouse game. But I think then as soon as kind of Bernardo scored on that 55th minute, ticker, it was just, you know, relentless pressure, and you have to be one hell of a defense to try and keep that out.
Yeah, I mean, there's an inevitability, isn't there? Like, if you can hang on, if it's 2-0, you get to 70 minutes, whatever it is, and you're thinking, okay, maybe we can do it, but there's a machine-like quality to Manchester City in general, you know, the precision with which they play, and now they've got this striker who, I mean, efficiency, is that the right word? I have Haaland's efficiency written down here in my notes. And, you know, even something like the movement for the first goal, it looks really simple, but he steps out, he steps back in at just the right time. For once, Phil Foden actually puts in a cross for him rather than shooting. And, you know, he's a big guy. He gets his head on it. And, you know, the way he went on then to score his hat trick with so few touches in a game, it's quite remarkable the potency he has, when you could say in many ways he's not as involved in the game as you would expect many Manchester City players to be, because of their, you know, their style, their possession style. He seems sort of almost at odds with everyone else, but he's there to do such a specific job and he's so good at it.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's almost like we've taken a leaf out of other sports' book, because in basketball, in American football, they often have players with specific roles to come on and do certain things. And you're right, he's just the kind of antithesis of what Manchester City are under Pep Guardiola. But the way I've sort of understood it, did you ever play Grand Theft Auto when you could do like those cheat codes?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've played all those games, but which one were the cheat codes?
It's just, you know, when you can like find them online and it will be like a 20 thing sequence of like up, down, square,
left, right, and then
you get like unlimited damage, or you get, you know, 5-star and you can drive helicopters around. I feel like Man City have the cheat code with Haaland, and it takes them about an hour to activate it, because, you know you have the cheat code, but it's important to give others the illusion that you're not actually cheating. And I just feel like around the hour mark, Pep just presses the red button and he's like, okay, it's a Haaland activation mode. Then he comes out of this like transformer thing, like, you know, yeah, like, and just, you know, gets into formation. It's just incredible. The third goal.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
I mean, what is that? How do you stop that? Joel Ward is just desperately trying to get back to him and try and put him under any kind of pressure. And the ease in which he just controls it in stride, takes a touch, plumps it right in the corner, and it's just, you know, he's a unicorn. He's a freak. Quite alarming that you see him with 6 goals already. And we're only 4 games in. I think that's a bit of a taste to come.
Yeah, yeah. 6 goals and he's only had 3 touches of the ball. Somehow he's managed to score 6 goals.
I don't know if you watched Match of the Day, but they did like a little funny segment on his heat maps. And it's literally just red in the center circle and red in the 6-yard box. there's nothing in between. He's just such a unique player. Yeah. And I think he's going to do a lot of damage.
He must be terrifying for a defender because he's just so big. Kind of scary looking guy anyway, you know what I mean? He looks like a villain from a Die Hard movie. And he's just got this physical power, incredible pace, brilliant touch. The finish as well for the third goal was just like, oh, goalkeeper was like, what's he going to do? Oh, it's gone. It's in the back of the net. I mean, what do you make of the fact that City are conceding a lot of goals, certainly more goals than you would normally expect them to concede? Does it matter when they can do that, when they can do what they did? I mean, at some point it will catch up with you. You're better off not conceding, obviously, but is that a weakness that might play out over the season, or is this just maybe a little bit of imbalance early on that will probably sort itself out in time?
It's difficult to say, really. I think they've been victim to maybe a couple of underperformers. I think Kyle Walker's been a little bit below his normal level. I think Rodri's been a bit suspect defensively as well, when often he's kind of the shield right in front of that back two and the back four. So I think it's just early teething issues, to be honest. And like you said, you can concede 2, but if you can score 4 or 5, then does it really matter? I think there's going to be some games where they're punished, but overall you're just playing a numbers game, aren't you? And more often than not, their creativity, their guile up front will eventually break teams down. and it's just, you know, they're a goal scoring machine. When they flick the switch, not many teams can stop them. And that's the issue. And they've just added Haaland. I know they lost Gabriel Jesus, they lost Sterling, but ultimately they're still an incredibly fun, vibrant attacking force. And, you know, if they concede a couple of goals, I don't think they'll really care too much, to be honest.
Speaking of goals, I suppose we have to touch on Liverpool bouncing back from defeat against Manchester United, which will sting. The classic wounded animal response from Liverpool and Bournemouth. I mean, you wouldn't put any money on them staying up already. You know, I think they're the most nailed-on team for relegation I can remember in a long, long time. Perhaps since that, was it a Fulham team a good few years ago who were just like, oh, they're just not winning any points?
I mean, there was like Fulham, there was Derby away back. Like the
Derby, that's
low,
what it was.
Record low of points. They're just, I don't know if they're that bad, but they're for sure not staying up. I mean, it's what you said. If Liverpool could have, cherry picked to stay on topic there, any opponent in the league, they would have picked Bournemouth to come to Anfield on a nice sunny day, lunchtime kickoff. They're up for it. Fans are ready for a response. And as soon as the early goals started going in, there was just no resistance. At least usually in those batterings, sometimes there's like 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the team with a semblance of resistance or defensive shape or structure. But the ease in which Liverpool were just getting in time after time after time, whether it was Diaz on the left, Salah on the right, Firmino through the middle, and it was, you know, really, really bad. And the thing is, Scott Parker can do as much as he wants in his post-match press conference. You know, my players were honest, blah, 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 that, you know, I feel really bad for them today because they were trying. But at some point, regardless of what you've been allowed to spend, surely you can set up and coach a team. They had the best defense in the Championship last season, Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know what's happened this year, but they do not, they're just so easy to get through. And no matter who you're playing, you could be playing in a relegation six-pointer, but there's no way you're going to keep clean sheets and win games like that. So I really fear for them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, what do you think when a team is beaten like that 9-0? How much of the responsibility can you put on the players? Have they not done their jobs? Clearly some of them, you know, haven't done their jobs, as well as Liverpool player, as well as the opposition play. You know, there's been some failing somewhere. How much of it is down to the manager in terms of his game plan? Or is it just kind of like just a freak thing that happens? So it's like the perfect storm. Liverpool play brilliantly, Bournemouth play hopelessly. You know, as we said, Liverpool were looking to respond to what happened to them against Manchester United. They've started the season poorly, but we know that this is a very, very good Liverpool side. So is it just like one of those, you got to put it down to one of those days? Or is this for Bournemouth perhaps, you know, something a bit deeper, if you like?
I mean, look, they're not going to lose 9-0 every week, but I just don't see enough in that team to kind of compete at this level, which is, you know, it feels a bit strange writing them off so early. We're only four games in, but they don't pose a threat. I don't think they're strong enough defensively. I think their midfield is okay, but in terms of Premier League level, I mean, it's kind of like a team that you would expect to get in the third round of the FA Cup who can maybe spring an upset.
Sure.
If the conditions are right. But over a 38-game season, there's just not enough there. And I think they've also fallen into the trap of Scott Parker's kind of, what's the word, defeatist attitude. Because when they played us, he was like, oh, the quality of between the two teams is too big. And then again at Liverpool, he was like, yeah, you know, that's what happens when you come here and the quality is just too big. And it's not the, you know, if you look at page one on the motivation booklet,
yeah,
that's not going to be there, is it? You know, so I think there's also a danger of them falling into that, you know, why even bother kind of attitude and spirit, which I know shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But it can always linger in the back of their mind. So
yeah, he's got to pick them up, doesn't he? I mean, wear a different cardigan, add a number of stripes, take a couple of stripes away, whatever it might be, to get your players focused.
They should be relegated just for that. I mean, someone posted a screenshot of it, and it cost over £1,000.
And it was Andrew Allen, actually, who posted it.
Was it fair? Mm. I mean, how can you justify that to look like a granny at the barbecue? It's just, you
know. £1,320 for that cardigan. I mean
look, surely we can hook him up with some Adidas gear.
Yeah,
get him, for sure. get him in one of those carnival Jamaican inspired shirts on the Saturday.
I'm not sure that would motivate. Oh, our manager's wearing an Arsenal shirt on the sideline. That probably won't do it. But I mean, remarkably, Bournemouth are not even bottom of the table, having started so badly. Leicester City, bottom of the table with 1 point. I mean, the bottom three is Leicester, Wolves, and Everton. We'll talk about Wolves now in a couple of minutes, I think. But Leicester, what an opportunity they had to take a win away at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea down to 10 men. I mean, deservedly so as well. The second foul from Conor Gallagher was absolutely crazy. You know, when you're on
textbook
a yellow card.
Textbook yellow card.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. But, you know, maybe he's a player who over the years hasn't really got as many props as he deserves because he's, you know, all the furore that went with his move from Liverpool to Man City, you know, won so much at Manchester City. But Raheem Sterling, I think, is as good a signing as Chelsea have made in a long time. From an attacking perspective, when you look at the players who've come and gone in those positions for Chelsea, a lot of high-profile players, a lot of money, not much end product, but I think Raheem Sterling is going to, I think he will deliver for them this season.
Yeah, totally agree. I'm a huge fan of Raheem Sterling. And for me, he's been their most dangerous player all season. I know he hasn't scored, but against Leeds when they lost,
he had one disallowed actually against Leeds,
yes,
didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did as well. And then, yeah, yesterday, I mean, I'm amazed that it took them so long to figure out that he might be dangerous at the back post. I mean, he only scored, what, a million goals like that for Manchester City? I mean, just get Reece James on the ball, smashing it as hard as you can to the back post. I mean, that was an incredible ball in. I think Reece James is a super player as well. But like you said, when they needed an outlet, to be fair, I thought Kai Havertz kind of managed that well. He held up the ball well and managed to get his side territory when they needed it. But Raheem Sterling was the obvious threat. And yeah, a real missed opportunity for Leicester. I mean, they were so passive. They really offered nothing. Mm-hmm. It's a huge shame because that was a big chance for them to obviously get some points on the board and really make a statement, but also just to get the general feeling onto a better track at the club. But for me, it just feels like everything's going one way. The players don't feel engaged anymore. Fofana's about to join Chelsea. Tielemans, you know, does he have one foot out of the door? That penalty was very Xhaka-esque, the one that he gave away. Kasper Schmeichel's gone. Vardy doesn't feel like he's at the level that he was. There's no new signings. It's just kind of gone stale. I mean, I think there was even reports of the owners reportedly looking to try and sell up. So
right.
I'm not sure what's happening at Leicester. I just think it's a strong sense of apathy.
It's so weird. It's so weird because, you know, when they won the FA Cup and, you know, I remember at the time there was a celebration, whether it was, you know, on the pitch at Wembley or whether it was sort of, you know, back at the, what's their stadium called, the King Power or whatever King it Power. Was. But the owners were involved and they were on the pitch and you could see this looked like a club because let's remember a couple of seasons ago, like Leicester should have finished top four two seasons in a row and blew it in Brendan Rodgers style right at the end, right? But to be there and to be fighting for that, that's real progress for a club like Leicester. You know, the title win is a crazy one-off thing. We all know that. But there was a consistency to them and it felt like it was a club going in the right direction where the owners were engaged, the fans were engaged, the players, there was that connection that were something akin to what we're seeing at Arsenal. And now, bottom of the table, no signings apart from like a veteran goalkeeper coming in. And like you say, against Chelsea, I was watching some of it. They were very, very passive. Decent goal by Harvey Barnes.
Good player.
He is a good player. Harvey Barnes. I like him. Good left foot. But, you know, to go to Chelsea and play against 10 men for an hour and lose the game, it just sort of, it feels like every week there's a nail being hammered into their particular coffin, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I only see this going one way. And it's, I think I like Brendan Rodgers as a manager. I quite like his ideas and what he brings. And even though he's a bit David Brent at times, I think in general, he conducts himself well. But I think there's just this kind of phenomenon under him where things just turn and they don't turn gradually. They just turn very quickly. And I'm not sure what the reason for that is, but it seems very strange that not the decline, yes, but also just the general sense of apathy and the players not feeling engaged, fans not feeling engaged. I mean, their set piece prowess is just defensively, they're a shambles. And it's, I really don't know. I think they'll obviously turn it around eventually, but you know, Europe is a big dream for them at the moment. So we'll have to see. I don't give him long in the job, to be fair.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if he was gone, you know, after Thursday, depending on what happens between now and the end of the transfer window. If they don't get any players in, there's no backing for the manager. And, you know, players can feel that as well. And I think Leicester are going to be in for a very, very difficult season unless something happens in the transfer market. They get a couple of players in and it sort of gives them the injection that they need. I was cooking on Saturday afternoon. I had the match on in the kitchen, Southampton versus Manchester United. I really hate seeing them win games. You know, I just, it's so ingrained in my DNA, particularly when Bruno Fernandes scores. But like, I was looking for Southampton to try and get something from this one. It would have been decent. I think they probably should have had a penalty.
The McTominay handball.
Yeah.
The five handballs in one.
The one where he sort of wiggled his arms around. I know the first one was accidental, but he kind of slapped the ball away the second time. Like maybe he was just trying to get his arm out of the way. But it was one of those where I looked at it and thought, if that was happening, you know, in an Arsenal match, I would want that penalty.
Hashtag you've seen them given.
Yes.
I mean, I think it was an even game, but I think it was a game where quality told. Because I think United, apart from that one crazy goal mouth scramble, which was an incredible bit of defending from Carl Walker-Peters and a good save from Gavin Bazunu as well, who I really like. He's a good keeper, I think.
Good Irish lad.
Yeah, exactly. I think he'll be one of the better keepers in the league. You just saw it there with that one bit of quality. I mean, Dallo actually found Bruno Fernandes pretty well, but the finish was really nice and composed, straight into the corner. And then when Southampton had their chances, there was one from Che Adams that went straight at De Gea. There was one right at the end with Sekou Mara volleying just wide. And I think they just... even Bella Kochap, he was stretching for that ball there and he just hit it over from close range. So it was fine margins, really. Mm. And in the end, just the quality told. But I agree, I just hate Bruno Fernandes and his stupid face, his moany face. But also, I don't know what you think. Have you noticed much of this, like, Lisandro Martinez discourse? But for me, it's been really tedious how everyone was kind of unsure about him at the start, and, you know, he was a bit small. How will he cope in English football? Mm. And now it's gone the complete opposite way, and everyone seems to be tracking every single aerial duel this man is going to compete for the rest of his Manchester United career. Like, he's, you know, he won 100% of his aerial duels against Southampton. I was like, yes, he contested one. And he contested one aerial duel. Stop putting 100% of his aerial duels won. Put one out of one. You know, this is like, and now journalists are in on it as well. Like, it's really strange. I found everyone's trying to prove them wrong now, kind of thing. And it's just the whole thing swung completely. I'm not sure.
It's just sort of Twitter gotcha culture, isn't it? You know, if somebody has a bad game, then, you know, or whatever it is, you know, they're going to get reamed. But, you know, you can manipulate statistics. I think Orbino was saying something similar on the Arscast a couple of weeks ago, where he was talking about people misusing statistics, like you said there. He won 100% of his aerial duels, but he only won one out of one. You know, I mean, that is, you know, technically 100%, but it is sort of misrepresenting things. There are a couple of quick things I wanted to just talk about. Everton continue to struggle. 1-1 with Brentford. Anthony Gordon could be on the way to Chelsea. We don't quite know. But Brentford got an equaliser. So Frank Lampard continues to struggle. They've signed Neil Mope. Mm-hmm. So there's
they really don't look good.
No.
And it's interesting because normally selling Anthony Gordon at 60 million would have been, in my opinion, quite a simple decision.
Yeah.
You know, especially even as an academy prospect. But now he's in a unique position where he's arguably worth more to Everton than that, which is amazing because he's the only player who looks capable of doing anything in an attacking sense. He took his goal really well on the weekend. But I like Brentford. You know what? I think Brentford are doing things the right way. Like the way they play. They're very intense. They like to use the wide areas a lot. And I think there'll be a tough game for a lot of teams this season. They've already recruited some good players in Mikael Damsgaard, Keane Lewis-Potter, and they've got already Ivan Toney and Brian Mbeumo there. So I think they're on a good way and they're pretty mid-table in the Premier League, which when you think about it is an impressive achievement for Thomas Frank.
For sure. Also struggling, Steven Gerrard, lots of boos when Villa were beaten by West Ham. Mm. You know, before I ask you for some thoughts on that, there were just a couple of little moments. There was a breakaway in one of the games. It was West Ham and the most obvious foul on John McGinn set West Ham free. Don't know if you saw that bit, but it was like a sweep.
No, I didn't.
It was, they were breaking and he sort of swept his leg almost like Karate Kid. And West Ham went up the other end. They didn't make enough of the break to get a goal. But there was a very similar incident in the Wolves-Newcastle game where Wolves thought they were 2-0 up and there was a foul.
Yeah, I did see that one. Yeah, and look, Pedro Neto, wasn't it?
It was Pedro Neto on Ryan Fraser. I was looking at this in a bar on Sunday afternoon. I was going, who is that old man coming on for Newcastle? And then I realized it was Ryan Fraser who'd been linked with us in the not too distant past. I was going, Jesus, time has not, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but time has not been kind to that man.
Those Scottish summers can be cruel.
Yeah, that must be it. But I think I think it's to do with the let it flow thing, and I do wonder if maybe they would have pulled it back. But you know, I was curious to see on both occasions the referee let what I thought were pretty obvious fouls go.
I mean, maybe that is what they've been told.
Yeah.
To be fair, in general, I have seen more of a willingness for referees to let things go. And for me, the whole point of VAR is to give the opportunities for referees to do that. You know, if you're not sure about a handball, just let the play go on and they'll check it.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't need to make a decision right there and there on the spot, because you've got, I mean, I know it hasn't always been used to the best effect, but the whole point of having, you know, video assistant referee is that they can help. So for me, it's you know, it's all good. I'm quite happy for the game to be open and kind of, because too many times you get the stop and start games and they're just terrible to watch. So I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
I listened last week. Ken Early on Second Captains was talking about Wolves. He said they're the most Portuguese side ever. Of course, they've got a lot of Portuguese players, but basically they play nice football but just don't score enough goals. And I think there's something to that. They are a good team. They've got some very good players. Great goal from Ruben Neves to put them ahead. And they probably should have extended their lead, but it is a great goal from Saint-Maximin, wasn't it, to equalize?
Oh, what a finish. It just was like the perfect, I mean, the clearance out from, I think it was Hwang, was kind of really lazy and tired.
Not
and
good,
I just thought,
yeah,
you know, he'd been tracking back and just tried to boot it anyway. But the way he kind of stepped onto it and, you know, just nestled into the corner, and the whole silence of the stadium where you could just hear the away fans in the distance was really good. I love it when the away team scores like that and it's a last minute goal. But yeah, lovely technique, really good.
Newcastle could have won it as well in the end, to be fair.
They had a header off the bar, incredible for Bruno Lage. I mean, especially because they've spent money, Wolves. And like you said, they're hanging around down the bottom of the league. So we'll see if they... I know they're bringing in Sasha Kalajic from Stuttgart,
yeah,
who's a big old centre forward. So maybe he can help. But yeah, I don't know what it is. They're just really lacking that final action, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously Raul Jimenez suffered that terrible injury and doesn't look like he's the same player since. But yeah, like you said, they're bringing in a striker. Whether they're going to let a winger go or not remains to be seen. We'll have to...
Domino effect, anyone?
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, they do look technically very good, but just, you know, as we saw last season, actually, when we played them, you know, they're a good side and they'll make life difficult for you and they'll make it tough to take points, but they don't really put the ball in the back of the net with enough efficiency. So maybe this new guy will help. I think they need him at this point.
Yeah, he's a good player and he'll be a handful. So maybe that's what they need.
So have we've covered all the games, I think. Is there anyone we've forgotten to mention?
I mean, we kind of brushed over Villa, but I'm terrified to say something about them because I probably jinx it for Arsenal in midweek.
Well, there you go. Yeah, we are playing Villa on Wednesday, and I don't want to think about, you know, they're on a terrible run. They haven't won any games. You know, that seems to feed.
That's
in.
What we're good at, Andrew. That's what we do. That's what Arsenal do. So
that was the old Arsenal.
True.
What looking ahead to the fixtures in midweek, is there one that stands out to you? I mean, I think West Ham Spurs on Wednesday night is certainly one which, you know, I would like to see West Ham, you know, find a bit of form. And that's always a testy game.
They don't like each other.
No.
Which is good because
West
Ham usually give them a game.
Nobody likes Spurs.
True. Yeah. I think that has potential. The thing is, with West Ham, I think they'll be fine. You know, they've made some good signings this summer. They've got Lucas Paqueta coming in as well, who's going to add some fun and some flair. But when they're not able to break in transition, I find them quite easy to nullify. They're a bit one-dimensional. So for me, the test will be if they can break down, you know, teams who are kind of sitting back. But I think they'll be fine overall. It's just, I find it quite curious because under Moyes, what made them so good was literally just Antonio and the rest of the Red Arrows running behind him.
Yeah.
But now they're kind of being found out a bit, but we'll see. Hopefully they can they can do a number on Spurs. I mean, if I was looking at a game, I'd probably say Liverpool Newcastle.
That's got some history, doesn't it?
Between them, and you know, I think Newcastle are pushing for Europe, shall we say? So they'll maybe want a big result to show, look, we're here and we're here to stay. Isak's going to be around, so maybe it's the perfect night for him to show the Premier League what he's about.
It's going to be curious, and we're obviously going to wait and see what happens in the last few days of the window and who strengthens. And you know, Brighton, we didn't even mention Brighton, by the way, sitting in fourth place with a decent win over Leeds, who looked good last week, of course, and beat Chelsea. So good result for Brighton. Let me just ask you then quickly, what was your goal of the week? Goal of the weekend?
You know what? I got it last week, so you can go first this week.
I mean, I think I'm going to leave it in your hands, but I'm going to say the one I enjoyed the most was Trent Alexander-Arnold, the third goal against Bournemouth. There's just something about the way he lined it up and just put the ball exactly where he wanted to put it. You know, sometimes a long-range effort can be speculative, where a guy is just going, I'll give this a whack and see where it goes. You could see he wanted to put it right in that top corner, and that's exactly where he put it. So I'm going to pick that one, which probably leaves you with the
foot like a traction engine. I think I'm going to go for Saint-Maximin. I just thought it was, you don't really see a lot of goals like that.
No.
And the kind of the technique, the execution to kind of run onto it like he did and just place it really nicely into the corner. I think it was an excellent goal. But I loved Haaland's one as well. The third one was just, you know, ridiculous.
Yeah. And even the Bernardo Silva goal as well was really good. He just makes those look so simple. All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there for this particular episode. Phil, thank you very much as always.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And to you guys here on Patreon, thank you for being here. Thanks for your support. Hope you enjoyed this one, and we'll catch you on the next one.